Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today, Alfred Addis, well, he's on a one-day hiatus today, so we will be returning, both Al and myself, tomorrow. However, I am pleased for the full hour today to announce a special guest, Doug Noland, who writes a very informative financial blog, Credit Bubble Bulletin. I know you've heard me mention that before on the program, but we're going to get his insight on why we are experiencing such a drop in gold prices and, of course, the record high stock market. But while we're waiting to connect with Doug, let's get to the market report for November 17th. 2016. And yeah, I saw a headline today right before the program, right before getting connected. Mitt Romney is being considered for Secretary of State. Interesting. I thought that was given to old Rudy. So, politics makes strange news. Anyway, let's get to the market report today. Stocks, again, mostly higher after Yellen testimony. Treasury slipped a little bit. European stocks were higher. And, of course, Yellen is going to hint at a rate hike. We're also going to be talking about the Treasuries today. Dollar index hits a 13.5-year high. And crude oil loses a little bit of steam. And we had a little bit of a bounce back in gold prices today. So first, let's get to the gold prices today. We have gold. It's down $640 on gold today at $1,219. But we did see a low of $1,210 and a high of $1,230. So a lot of volatility in gold today. Silver. Let's see here. We have silver down 29 cents at $16.77. Platinum was down 8 at $939. Palladium continues to rise up about 1.3%, 732, up 10. The USDX today was up 0.60 at 100.93, and crude oil was down 68 at 44.89. The paper markets today, the Dow was up 35 at 18,903, and the NASDAQ was up 39 at 5,333. The S&P up 10 at 2187. The 10-year yield was up 0.05 at 2.28%. And the euro continues to drop, of course, with the strength in the dollar. You have a euro down 0.73 at 106. And as I said, the European markets were just barely, they barely had a little bit of breath in them overnight. Doug Nolan has written his blog for 16 years, and he has over 25 years of financial industry experience within hedge funds, mutual funds, international bonds. He has impeccable credentials, and I do encourage you to visit his blog, Credit Bubble Bulletin. And I would like to welcome Doug Nolan to the program this afternoon. Good afternoon, Doug.
Hi, Melody. Nice to be with you today.
Well, the last time you were here, it was the first time, and the last was in June or July, and a lot of things have happened since then. And, you know, Doug, I weed through all kinds of news reports, financial reports every day, and it becomes clearer and clearer on just how dysfunctional this whole world is. And the most recent of puzzles is the stock market rally to record highs since the election. And even while on the night of the election, I mean, you're talking about 900-point drop in futures. Do you believe all this optimism is warranted?
I wish it was warranted. I fear, and you used the word, Melody, dysfunctional. I look at these markets, I just believe they're highly dysfunctional. And we can look at the election, right? A lot of hedging had taken place going into the election. There was a lot of fear of what the markets considered, you know, a low probability of a Trump victory. But the fear was that you would have a big sell-off in that news. A lot of market professionals bought insurance, bought derivative protection. They were positioned cautiously going into the election. That night, election night, when it became clear that Trump probably was going to win, again, the markets, you had huge moves in the markets. The Dow and Japanese yen was up about 4%, and the Mexican peso was down 14%. And it looked like the next day it could be, a dramatic potential, financial crisis type of day. Instead, it was one of these miraculous rallies. And instead of needing derivative protection, everybody wanted to unwind their trades quickly, unwind their hedges. The hedge funds had to cover their shorts. And then immediately, instead of panic selling, you had panic buying. It was dramatic, but I don't see anything healthy about it. And I think it's always good to keep in mind the way this works. It's kind of the news and the analysis will often follow the direction of the market. If the market would have been down big the day after the election, then the news, the spin would have been very negative, very bearish, that all these problems that people were worried about would have been noted. Instead, the markets were up, so the focus immediately turns positive, that there's going to be a Trump stimulus, that the economy will be stronger. So that takes on kind of a life of its own, and then a lot of it just performance chasing in the marketplace, where, again, the hedge funds have to unload what they're short and buy what's going up, and you get a lot of volatility in markets that are not easy to understand if you look at the underlying fundamentals.
Well, that fear going into the election and the reason they hedged themselves, I mean, that fear just doesn't disappear. I mean, you would think you'd have that same fear of him being elected, that same fear would be there afterwards. And you also mentioned that the market follows the news. Isn't the market, or the news follows the market, isn't the market supposed to follow the news?
Well, it would be nice if it worked that way. These are not normal markets. I would argue they're highly abnormal. And one thing we have to keep reminding ourselves every day as we examine and try to analyze and monitor these markets, we're currently, $2 trillion annualized QE globally. There's this view here in the U.S. that, okay, the Fed ended QE and the markets kept going up, so QE is not a big deal. We don't even have to pay attention to it. Well, the reality is we still have $2 trillion worth of QE globally. A lot of that liquidity makes its way into the U.S. markets. And I think what this liquidity backdrop has done is it has taken the fear away of these self-reinforcing market collapses, where especially if you have a lot of leverage in the bond markets or in derivatives and all of a sudden you have a de-risking, you have the hedge funds unwinding trades, liquidity can evaporate quickly in the market, and we've seen that repeatedly over the years. Well, now there's no fear of that, because the thought is, well, we have two, you know, we have all this QE, and especially, you know, after the day after the election, it's back to king dollar. There's all the liquidity goes into the dollar. It wants to avoid the emerging markets. It wants to avoid the yen, the euro. So it's going to come into the dollar. It's going to come into whatever U.S. securities are rising most rapidly, which is stocks. So quickly, the fear of a market accident is a fear of being left behind in king dollar and this big rally in U.S. risk assets. So, you know, again, not a normal market dynamic, but these are the markets we live with right now.
So, I mean, so basically, this could go on forever. I mean, it's against my thinking. It's against what I believe and what I follow. But can these markets go on forever?
Well,
I mean, don't they finally run out of money?
Mm-hmm. I think so. My view is, and I've chronicled this for a long, long time, and that we're in what I've called, I started calling it this back in 2009, the global government finance bubble. I think this is the granddaddy of all bubbles. I think it's gone to the heart of money and credit. It's in all global markets, in basically all financial assets. And I don't think they can continue to print. And I think what's changed here is I think the global bond market bubble, which is a very important component of the overall bubble, I think the global bond bubble has been pierced. And we've seen dramatic increases in interest rates. We saw rates yields rise again today. And we've seen rates, U.S. 10-year treasury rates over the last few months up 75 basis points and 0.75%. We've seen just recently yields rise over 100 basis points in Brazil and Mexico. We've seen yields rise over 100 basis points in Italy. So to me, this is a major signal that things are changing, that we're at a potentially historic inflection point. But at the same time, we still have this ongoing QE, which keeps these markets liquid. And I think, and I was thinking a lot about 1994. In 1994, the Federal Reserve started raising interest rates, and immediately the markets suffered, and there was a big de-risking, deleveraging, and a lot of trouble in the bond and derivative markets. And what happened is that the Fed was kind of confused as we moved on in 1994. They were thinking, okay, do we raise rates more aggressively to help the bond market so the bond market doesn't fear inflation and everything? Or do we slow down our rate increases? And I think now it's going to be very difficult for global central bankers to decide, what do we do? The markets are worried about inflation. Do we tighten more aggressively? Do we not do as much QE? Or if we reduce QE, does that lead to more fears for all the markets? So I think this is in the end of the game, getting close to the end of the game. The Fed will be raising rates, it looks like, next month. I think the ECB soon will start to taper. The Bank of Japan is flailing in their policy, but they need to rein in just egregious monetary inflation. So I think through 2017, we're going to see rising central bank rates, and we're going to see much less QE. So I think markets can enjoy the Trump rally for now, but I think there are difficult times ahead in the coming months.
Well, if the central banks begin to rise rates and things begin to unravel, will they go back and think that they can manage? Or will it be to the point that once they begin rising, they won't be able to control it anymore?
Yeah, and I think that's right. I think there's an enormous amount of leverage and derivatives in yields, not to mention all the money that's gone into what we call in the market bond proxies, higher dividend yielding stocks, into commercial real estate and basically anything with that's provided a yield. There's been enormous amounts of speculative finance that have flowed in to these areas over recent years. So now we're going to see, you know, a major reversal away from some of those asset classes. We've already started to see some of that in the stock market, but I think it's all highly destabilizing. And again, I don't think de-risking, de-leveraging works well at all when we don't have as much QE. So the dynamic, what happens is we start to see less QE, the markets start to get nervous, you have more de-risking, de-leveraging, and then the markets start to fear, I got to get out quickly, I need to get out of the markets. We haven't had that fear for a while, but I wouldn't be surprised. I don't think it'll take too long for the markets to be concerned with how things are unfolding in the bond market.
Well, when they begin to start pulling out, where are they going to go?
And that's often the discussion. Okay, if you sell bonds, what are you going to buy? Well, if you deleverage, you're kind of unwinding a leverage trade. So you don't have any money to buy. You take the proceeds from that sale and you pay off the loan that you took out to buy that asset. So if we get into a serious de-risking, de-leveraging, all of a sudden they're selling, but there's no buying of other asset classes. And that's where it gets more difficult in the marketplace. And I apologize. This is kind of challenging analysis. It can be kind of unconventional, but let's remind ourselves that we now have a hedge fund industry. It's $3 trillion worth of assets, and how many more trillion of securities, we don't know. We also have an ETF industry that's at $3.2 trillion. So we need to remind ourselves that this is, again, not a normal market environment. And there's enormous amounts of trend following, performance chasing, liquidity. I call it this massive pool of global speculative finance. When it's embracing risk and buying securities, it looks like a bull market. But we've seen in the past repeatedly how quickly that bull market can turn to what they call a flash crash or fear and all of a sudden a rapid unwind of a lot of these sophisticated trades.
Well, I would to me, I think that how can they control? I mean, we're talking about $3 trillion, and you're talking about numbers that we don't even know. It truly is staggering how well they have controlled it. Or do they just control it through the media and what they want the normal people to know, where behind the scenes it is something a little bit more of panic?
Yeah, and we saw another one of these, unusual market reversals, the late night and early morning after the election. And I don't know who controls it. I know there's a lot of, you can call them conspiracy theories or whatever. I don't, but they don't seem to be a normal, it's not normal market behavior. And I don't know if it's just the Wall Street firms that are aggressively trading or global central banks. I have no idea. But there is a view in the marketplace that these central bankers will not allow the markets to go down much. And it's that view that encourages a lot of speculation and a lot of leverage and a lot of bubbles. And we've seen repeatedly how these bubbles eventually burst. So I'm very confident that this is a historic bubble. And I'm very confident when it bursts, it's going to be very problematic. But the timing of these things are always very challenging. And I've often said, maybe I said it back in July, that as an analyst of bubbles, they go to unimaginable extremes and then double. Things get crazy, and that's kind of the way I see it in these security markets. But when we talk about the global bubble, also, it doesn't get a lot of attention, but after the election, there's been a lot of pressure in the emerging markets, and there's a lot of fragility there, economic fragility, financial fragility. We've seen a continued devaluation of the Chinese currency. So we could get back into a situation where there's aggressive capital flight out of China and real concerns for their very bloated and vulnerable financial system. You look in the emerging markets, go down the list again, Brazil, Mexico, Malaysia, Indonesia, Turkey, the list goes on and on. These are very, very vulnerable banking systems.
All right, Doug, we're going into our first break of the day today. Doug and I will be right back. Please stay tuned. You are listening to Financial Survival.
We will find you acting on your best behavior. Turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to rule the world.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cedarstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cedarstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and pleased to have Doug Nolan joining us today, who has such an incredible blog, and I go there every day. I read it every day. People ask me all the time, Doug, where do you go? Who do you follow? And I says, I don't follow anyone. But what I do read, I read Doug Nolan, and I go to his blog, which is Credit Bubble Bulletin, because there's so much opinion and analysis of opinions and opinions, and it's, I don't want that, because when I draw my own conclusions, I want facts. And then I can determine what I believe and what is fact and what isn't, and that's how I come up to my conclusions. But I've been doing this for over 22 years, so I pretty much know where we're headed and where we're going. But folks, you do have to visit his blog, Credit Bubble Bulletin. So with that said, you've had a long history of dealing in the markets, over 25 years. Would you like to comment on that at all, or?
Well, you know, and thank you for the kind words about my blog. I know when I started it back in 1999, I was just, you know, I was convinced that finance had changed fundamentally. You know, you're in this new age financial system, unfettered credit, unfettered money. And I thought as soon as the Federal Reserve came to better understand what was happening as far as securitizations and derivatives, what I called Wall Street Finance, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, et cetera. I thought once they understood how this was unfolding, that they would, of course, rein it in. And I expected, you know, to have a bubble in the title of my blog for, you know, a couple of years. I had no idea that I would still be chronicling this bubble in 2016. So this whole thing has been extraordinary to watch the evolution in the markets. I think when I first started back in 1990, working for a hedge fund in San Francisco, there was like $35, $40 billion in the hedge fund industry. And today it's at $3 trillion. Today a lot of the major hedge funds, they don't even analyze. They just run these quant models. They just run these models. And the whole proliferation of these high-frequency trading strategies, and even I've already mentioned the ETFs, it's just amazing to watch how the market has changed. And a lot of this change has come because of what the Federal Reserve has done. One thing that's not appreciated is this policy of manipulating interest rates, manipulating bond yields, basically manipulating security prices. That has encouraged, that's made it very difficult for the traditional fundamentalist, the person that wants to study and carefully analyze companies, to perform well, because it's created this market environment unlike what we've had in the past. It doesn't work the way it used to, and those of us that focus on risk and analysis are at a real disadvantage. It's easier just to buy an index and not worry about risk, be completely risk indifferent, and that way you outperform. Well, the Fed's created this outperformance for the passive management, so Wall Street's created all these new instruments, and literally trillions of dollars have flooded in to just playing, just saying, I'm just going to buy the market. I don't need anybody out there analyzing the Federal Reserve policy or analyzing company fundamentals or analyzing the economy. They just make me underperform. I'm just buying the index. And I think that's a very dangerous place to be, because you literally have multi-trillions of dollars in funds, and that money will reverse course and come out of those funds when they start to lose. They're not there for conviction. They're not there because they trust the manager. They're not there because they trust stock market valuations. They're there because I want to play the market. And I don't think markets can be any more speculative than what they've become over recent years. And basically no one even mentions it. You know, they act like this is all normal. But for me, this is market speculation unlike anything we've seen since, you know, the late 1920s, unfortunately.
Well, you know, I often talk to my clients and the listeners about fundamentals of gold. That's what you have to stay focused on, and you're absolutely right. There are no fundamentals in anything else. And it's gold is about the only thing that you can really, truly follow, because they will act. They are there, and they're not going to change. That's why so many of my listeners and clients are confused. They listen to their financial planners. They've had half-decent returns. They have a little bit of fear, but they really don't get the true picture of the underlying problems that these markets or the condition. And like you says, they're not there for anybody but to make money and play a game, and they'll move just as quick as they can.
Absolutely. And I somewhat hesitate to say this, but I think it's true that securities markets today are almost uninvestable. And what I mean by that is investing is where you're out there gauging risk versus reward, and you're making an investment because you're confident that you're buying something at a price below its inherent value, that you understand the risk that you're taking. I don't think we have any way to gauge risk, because we've never seen bond markets like we've seen over recent years. We've never seen central bank policy like this. We have no idea what the Trump presidency means. We have no idea what central bank policy is going to be. We have no idea what's going to happen in China. We have no idea. We know there's a lot of risk geopolitically, but it's unpredictable how this is going to unfold. So to me, yeah, you have no idea what the underlying risks are in the securities markets. Gold, that's different. We can analyze that, and we don't have to worry about central bankers or governments printing a lot of gold. We've seen gold weaken since the election. Disappointing. But I also think that's part of this dynamic of all of a sudden when the dollar's really strong, then that puts some pressure on gold. And also gold is an asset in this speculative universe competing against stocks and corporate debt, etc. So when everybody wants to embrace risk, you know, especially with hedge funds, they'll cut back on some of their gold and buy bank stocks, for example. But that certainly doesn't change the underlying fundamentals going forward. I for the long term, I certainly believe in gold for my family and for investors. And I look at strong King Dollar as kind of a gift that provides us greater purchasing power to average into to more, you know, bullion and precious metals and silver.
How high is the dollar going to go? It shocks me that it's at the level that it is.
Yes, it's amazing. But I remember King Dollar, you know, back in the late 90s. I think the dollar index went to 120, and then dropped back down to 80 or something like that. These things take on a life of their own and difficult to project. I think the dollar's vulnerable, but I think, when U.S. stock market finally starts to weaken, that should put some downward pressure on the dollar.
How does the government handle the debt when you see these swings in the currencies like it is? The strength that we've seen, does it really even affect?
One thing that is worth noting, our deficits have already started to rise. Here in the U.S., our fiscal deficit for 2016, the one that just ended, I think our deficit was about almost $600 billion, and that was up almost a third from the previous fiscal year. Now we're seeing yields rise. We're going to see the Federal Reserve raise rates, at least in December, it looks. So just in debt service, our deficits will rise more. Then if the economy starts to weaken, then we could see dramatically higher deficits. So we could easily see a situation where central banks are raising rates while the deficit's getting bigger, and all of a sudden there's a little worry about who's going to buy all this debt that's going to come to auction. We've already seen that the Chinese and the Russians and the Saudis and some of the four significant international buyers of our treasuries, they've decided they would rather liquidate. And I think that's part of what's spooking the bond market now. The bond market's just saying, okay, this is we passed an important inflection point. A lot of things can change now, and I don't really need to own as many government debt, as many government securities now, treasury securities. So it's one more area that's, unstable and highly uncertain.
You mentioned Janet Yellen. Most likely we will have a rate increase come December. I think everyone's expecting a quarter point. Could she actually do more? would she do more?
I don't think so. I mean, there's... The last thing they ever want to do is surprise the markets, right? They want to pander and pamper. But the point is, going forward, and even today, right, we saw, housing starts, and I think there's a bit of an aberration, but housing starts are the strongest since August 2007. Core CPI is now up 2.1% year over year, slightly above their so-called target. Jobless claims are all the way down to 1973 levels, and I'm not arguing that the U.S. economy is strong or healthy or anything like that. I think it's highly imbalanced. If all of a sudden inflation starts to be more of an issue, there'll be more pressure on the Fed. They can't just do one rate increase a year, just wait every December and do a rate increase. They'll feel the pressure to start to normalize interest rates to try to stabilize the so-called inflation expectations in the marketplace. So I don't expect them to go 50 basis points, but all of a sudden we could see them back doing 25 each meeting, and that will be quite an adjustment for the markets, but we'll just have to wait and see.
Well, you know, with the rise in the 10-year last week, the mortgage applications were down like 9%. Just in that, I mean, even though it was a healthy increase, it's nothing compared to what the housing market will experience, you know, when rates rates begin to be increased. So it's like there so I thought that was a significant 9.9% drop in a week just based on that. I can't imagine once it begins to become higher how quickly that'll dampen the housing market real quick.
In a hurry, and I would argue also, especially in kind of these jumbos, in the jumbo large mortgages, it seems to be those yields are more volatile. Those rates are more volatile depending on what's going on in the market. But yeah, and I don't think there's a lot of appreciation for the benefits or the boost that these yields have given to the economy, especially the housing market. And even, you know, we've had a huge boom in subprime auto lending and, auto lending generally. And I think a lot of that has been, they can securitize these into, asset-backed securities that pay a decent yield. And there's been a real popularity of those in the marketplace. And I could see that reversing course. And all of a sudden you have a tightening not only in mortgage credit, but in it could be credit cards and student loans and auto lending. And next thing you know, we're going to pay the piper a bit for pushing forward all this demand with these historically low yields that we've had over the last couple of years.
Well, it's just another situation where with all this subprime lending, I was reading about online loans. They're beginning to default. And yet it makes it seem like the economy is great, but yet when you look at the underlying debt, it is anything but great. And it's like we're just right back at the same problems as far as the economy.
And you scratch your head, don't you, Melody, that we do not learn our lessons. And subprime's interesting, and subprime is lending to people with poor credit. There's always the latest innovation that somehow makes subprime lending, profitable and practical and reasonable. And no, I'm sorry. If you lend to poor credits, it's going to come back and bite you. It always does. And some of the excesses we've seen over the last couple of years, I think they make, 2005 through 2007 look, small potatoes. In the online area is certainly one of them, and I think this subprime auto has gone completely bonkers. Yeah. And it's not just the used car market. It's financing leases, and you get these advertisements for lease two cars for $222. Well, that only works with interest rates near zero. And now as interest rates start to rise, it's going to be a different financial backdrop out there, especially in auto finance and clearly in home buying also. We'll just have to see how usually it takes a little while. And usually the housing market right now, it has enough momentum where it can absorb these rising yields because they really haven't risen that much yet. But then, give it some time and then it can even lead to a burst of buying where people try to jump in and buy before the mortgage rates go up again. But it shouldn't take too long before we start to see some, slowing in housing. Yeah, and as you mentioned, we're already seeing cracks in these online lenders, these online subprime lenders.
Well, they need that subprime, though, because in part, part and parcel, that is all part of the, they have to keep this debt bubble going. They need it. So they don't learn from anything. They learn how to use it, how to recreate it, reinvent it, but they still need it in order to continue the debt bubble.
Yeah, I was just thinking back, one of the first companies that I analyzed as an analyst for a hedge fund was this company called Yucarco. We want to be your car company. But then they made most of their money not selling the cars, but by subprime lending. And it ended up, you know, taking off. They changed their name to AmeriCredit. And interestingly, when General Motors basically failed and the government came in to bail them out, one of the first things they did was they bought AmeriCredit. I guess they knew, you know, they needed to get in and be more aggressive in subprime lending.
Hold on, Doug. We're going to take a couple of minutes for a commercial break. We'll be right back at Financial Survival.
Oh, won't you tell me again tonight? Each and every heart is...
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And again, thank you for joining us. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with Doug Noland. And I want to remind you, this program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. Doug, we talked about a lot of things, and you were finishing up with AmeriCredit. I didn't know if you wanted to add any more to that as we were heading into the break.
No, I just thought it was interesting, you know, in the heart of a crisis, in the heart of General Motors' failure, you know, when they were thinking ahead, they just, I guess they figured their recovery would require lending to a lot of high-risk credits, and it's interesting how these cycles work out. But that was my thought there, Melody.
All right. Well, we talked a lot about a lot of things, and is there anything else you'd like to, is there one item in particular that you think we might have missed?
Yeah. Well, you know, kind of big picture here, and from my analytical framework, right, bubbles are all about, you know, redistributions of wealth, and during the upside of the bubble, the perception is the pie is getting bigger, so people want to cooperate and integrate, and it's a feel-good type of a self-reinforcing prosperity. The downside of the bubble is very different because the perception is that the pie is smaller. People start to recognize that the bubble didn't create wealth, it just redistributed wealth. A lot of the expectations people have to get their home hopes up during the boom, and all of a sudden, you know, they lose money in the markets, they can lose their job, they can file bankruptcy, et cetera, right? These things are very destabilizing on society, especially when you have these recurring bubbles that we've had basically for 30 years. And now that it's gone global, I just think it's important for listeners to appreciate that this global dynamic now where the perception is the pie's getting smaller and everybody wants their share, and instead of cooperating and integrating, we're disintegrating, right? Trade relationships are breaking. There's, you know, political tensions, et cetera. And I think this is especially, we saw this in force in the U.S. during the election, and we'll continue to see it, unfortunately. But we also, this is a very important dynamic in Europe. The Italians have a referendum coming up on December 4th. That could be destabilizing. The ECB meets December 8th. So we'll keep our eye closely on Europe. At the end of the day, I don't think the euro works. You have a major financial dislocation coming at some point because I don't believe the Italians and the Germans will share a currency forever. And we'll just see how that plays out. So there's a lot of things to focus on over these coming weeks, but let's watch Europe. And I'll also bring up the fact that Italian yields, I mentioned before, are up 100 basis points. They're up to 2%. Well, they were at 7% at the beginning of 2012. So if we have a big unwind in European debt markets, I think that could be very destabilizing, not only for European markets, but for global markets generally. So I'll just throw that thought out there.
You know, you're talking about the euro breathing its last breath. When we had the Brexit, could you say that while Great Britain was part of the European Union, they weren't by currency, but while they were still a member, would you say that that was sort of the support of the euro? That was like the euro was actually backed, not per se, but in idea by Great Britain. And now that Great Britain is no longer a part.
Yeah, I think it's one more significant development as we get to European disintegration. And what I mean is individual countries wanting to have their own monetary policy, fiscal policy, currency, etc. Britain was obviously a key member of the EU. They weren't part of the euro experiment. They missed that, fortunately for them. But they clearly are part of this, the forces of disintegration that really are put the euro at significant risk. And I think folks forget back in 2012, in the summer of 2012, there were very serious concerns for the Italian banking system that Italy may have to leave the euro, and that the euro could, the euro monetary experiment could end. Draghi came in and changed the dynamic with whatever it takes, as much money as it takes, we'll print it. But I think that's only created a major bubble in European debt markets and security markets, and certainly hasn't, you know, rectified any of the internal imbalances that put the euro at such risk going forward.
You write about, we touched a little bit on this, but you write about the historic global bubble. A lot of analysts see it differently. What are they missing?
From studying bubbles for all these years, I come to believe that there's a very interesting dynamic where the more conspicuous a bubble, the less systemic it is, and the less systemic, the less dangerous it is. We saw the tech bubble. Everybody could see the tech bubble. It was pretty obvious back in 1999. But part of the reason it was obvious is because it was isolated in one sector, and when that one sector blew up, it caused some problems, but it wasn't a systemic crisis. I used to warn about the mortgage finance bubble, and people, you know, during especially, you know, 2004 through 2007, and people said, "Doug, where's the bubble? Well, you know, we see some, you know, excesses in California real estate, but it's certainly not systemic." But what they didn't appreciate was all that mortgage credit was feeding the markets, the security markets. It was feeding the economy through income growth. And then when the mortgage finance bubble burst, it was a systemic crisis because it affected the whole economy. What I'm arguing here is that this is a global dynamic. It's throughout the world. It's basically all asset classes. And because it's so dispersed everywhere, people look and it doesn't look like a bubble to them. But China is clearly a historic bubble. I look at valuations in, of U.S. stocks to GDP, and they're at historic levels. Household net worth to GDP is at a historic level, even surpassing 2007 and 1999. So depending on how you look at it, it's there. But conventional analysts believe, okay, central banks have it all under control, that yields will be low forever because inflation will never be a problem again. And you know, their perspective is that this is a sound, almost normal backdrop, and basically all the important data argues against that.
It isn't a new normal, is it? Or do they just ignore the you know, they have this feel good expectation, so do they just really ignore everything else and take it as far as they can ride it?
Well, in the analysis of the global government finance bubble, the granddaddy of all bubbles, is the bubble has gone to the heart of money and credit. It's gone to government debt, and it's gone to central bank credit. When this bubble bursts, I don't see the next source that reflates the next bigger bubble. When the technology bubble burst, the system, the central bank, and Wall Street used mortgage credit to reflate the next bubble. That was a huge bubble. When that bubble burst, the whole world has used government debt and central bank credit and interest rates to reflate this bubble. I don't know where we'll go from here. Bubbles always burst, and I don't see how we can reflate a bigger bubble. So I think they're stuck with this, and the problem is if they continue to do QE when interest rates rise and when inflation starts to percolate, that's going to be problematic. You could get a real surprise with inflation. If they stop QE and normalize interest rates, you've got a major readjustment in global security prices that will not go smoothly. So I don't know which of the two they'll do. I'm assuming they're going to print more money. But, you know, we'll just have to wait and see.
We saw throughout the presidential election, this campaign, you know, a deeply divided and antagonistic U.S. population. We see the same. We saw it in Brexit, France, Germany. We saw it in Greece. I mean, it's everywhere. Why do you believe there is so much frustration out there?
Well, unfortunately, people don't trust their institutions. They don't trust the system. Again, a lot of it is they've seen this inequitable redistribution of wealth. So a lot of people, you know, college students today, they don't trust capitalism. Well, I'm sorry, capitalism isn't to blame here. It's this unfettered money and credit that I've been chronicling and warning about going back to 1999. If folks haven't read the book When Money Dies, it's the story of the German hyperinflation, where you know the Germans kept printing, the central bank kept printing money, not realizing that they were the problem. They thought they were the solution. In the meantime, the damage that was doing to society was just, you know, unbelievably frightening, and we saw the consequences. We're certainly not at that point at all with the German hyperinflation, but you can really see the damage that's been done to our society. Here in the U.S., to the, you know, the world generally, and it's a very dangerous road to go down when you split your population, you split them ideologically, politically. Again, the pie's getting shrinking, the pie's shrinking, so people want to fight for their share of the pie. They They want more from the government because the private sector, they believe, is not fair. I'm sorry, the government involvement, in especially money and credit, has led us to where we are today. And as part of the problem with these bubbles, each bubble, when it bursts, it ensures more government activism. That's more activism from the central bank. That's more activism from deficit spending, stimulus, and just government control over the economy. And it just is a very, very bad and dangerous cycle. It's very concerning. And I've said, I was very fearful for the bubble back in 2007, but I wasn't worried like I am today as far as the geopolitical risk and as far as what is unfolding in our society, which to me is just deeply, deeply troubling.
To me, I find this social unrest that we're seeing and experiencing. And to think when we have this unfold, how much more, how that will be increased. And it is disturbing, and it is something to be fearful of. We have about 2 minutes left of the program, Doug. Do you care to give a view of 2017?
It's going to be very uncertain, and I don't want to sound like a wacko. And I imagine most of your listeners are already well on the way here. But it is time to get prepared for, let's expect the unexpected. Let's get prepared. Let's get our finances together. Let's be prepared for whatever might unfold, because I don't think most people will be prepared at all. So no. We'll all have to stick together and watch things unfold and be ready for if it's unrest in society or these geopolitical accidents that could unfold. It's going to be a troubling time, and I wish I could be optimistic, Melody. I really wish I could.
I do too. I would prefer to sell gold collectible coins where people are making bunches of money and they're going into collectibles and they're happy buying gold and silver instead of buying gold and silver to protect from what we really truly do face. But it is something that they must get prepared, and that's what we talk about all the time on this program. There was one more item I had for you. Well, maybe I'll just remind the listeners to visit your website. Anything you'd like to mention on your website, Credit Bubble Bulletin? It is
also
a great website.
I'm an employee at McIlvany Wealth Management, so I'll also mention their website, mwealthm.com. And also, Melody, I just want to say, let's do the best we can to stay optimistic, to stay positive, knowing that we've got to be prepared for the worst, because we don't want to go through our lives miserable. Let's get prepared and just look at this as so fascinating. Follow developments, but not get depressed about it, because it doesn't help getting depressed.
No, once you're prepared, then you can live your life. And that's why I tell people all the time, once you're prepared, you cannot stop living your life and let fear take over. And we do, not only in our finances, but our health and everything else. So, Doug, I want to thank you for joining us today. I appreciated when you joined us in July and again today. Credit Bubble Bulletin, folks. Alfred and I will be back tomorrow. So until then, folks, be safe and God bless.
Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.